everyone, and welcome to Minute 73 of Season 3 Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on this lovely Wednesday is Eric Deutsch from Flash Gordon Minute and Escape from New York Minute. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Well, we've already discussed Candy. We've discussed Christmas carols and singing in the rain. I don't know what we have up for today. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll maybe someone will actually start using their guns. What do you think? you never know. Could be. We'll have to wait and see. So, minute 73 begins with Hondo giving his SWAT report. It's not really Hondo, but you know. Hondo is the you know, the character played by Samuel L. Jackson in the movie SWAT, and you know, they're based on that TV show SWAT. So the main SWAT guy's name was Hondo. So I decided just to name this guy Hondo. So Hondo gives his SWAT report, and the minute ends with ominous lights coming from the distance. So yesterday we ended things where the SWAT team is in position, they're ready to go. And they're waiting for the go-ahead from Deputy Chief Dwayne T. Robinson. And then we hear over the radio, "We're ready." And Robinson looks over and goes, "Kick ass."
And very nonchalantly, too, just like the criminals, you know.
Correct.
It's all just, you know, really laid back about it, just confident and, yep, kick ass, let's do it.
Yeah. And at this point, the main SWAT guy says, "Go!" You know, they give them the green light, and we see the SWAT guys that are standing by the door, or standing near the door, start moving towards the door to do their work. And again, they look very professional the way that they're doing it. You know, you have one of them standing guard on the right hand side, one of them standing guard on the left hand side, and then one guy goes into the middle in order to try and pick the lock. You know, he slings his gun, his M16. Over his shoulder, and you know, takes out like a lockpick type of tool in order to try and get through, which is pretty funny that this is what they're trying. You know, you'd think they would have had a better plan of how to open the door. You know, like you think that they would. Do you think they know that this is an electronic door?
I don't think so, because what they're doing doesn't really seem like something that would open an electronic door.
Which means they didn't do their homework.
Yeah.
I know they didn't have that much time, but still, you know, you'd think that before you send in a SWAT team and say, "Okay, let's go pick the lock. Let's first see if it's a lock that can be picked." You know, it's an interesting way that they do it. And as they're doing this, we get an internal shot of Uli again, who's now eating a Mars bar.
Yeah, so there's only two possible explanations here for him eating the Mars bar. Either more time has passed in the movie than we sort of thought, because he was just eating a Nestle Crunch bar and putting the Nestle Crunch bar down in the last minute because he was getting ready to fight, and now he's got a Mars bar. I don't see how he had enough time to open up and eat the other Mars bar. So either more time has passed than we're led to believe, or it's just an editing continuity error.
Okay, so you're saying this is a continuity error.
Yeah, now,
what about the fact that maybe he had, you know, maybe he puts a few of them on the counter?
He could have, but again, in the last minute, he was putting down the Nestle Crunch bar and, like, getting the gun ready to prepare. So what happened from a minute ago movie time to now that instead he put his gun back down and picked up the Mars bar, unwrapped it, and started eating that? When the guys are, the cops are,
his stomach started growling. The pee. I don't know. But it's a great touch. Whether it's an editing error or whether it's you know, who knows. But it's a great touch that he's eating a different type of candy bar. You know, they're not showing him still eating the same Nestle Crunch.
That is true.
He's starving. That's what it comes down to. We basically established last week when we met Gail Wallens that this is 10 p.m. Okay, so this is around 10 o'clock at night. that this is all going on, plus or minus, right? And we know that they got the terrorists got to the Nakatomi building at sunset. Sunset was at 4:50, so that means they got there at 5. They've been there 5 hours. Uli's hungry. That's all it comes down to.
I want to get in also. I have just because I mean I know that you're deep into the movie, so I know you've covered all the actors and stuff. But I want to just get in that Al Leong, the actor here, he's one of those guys for me. Everyone's got those actors like, oh, there's that guy that they just see all the time. And Al Leong was always one of those ones for me. You know, it just seemed like he was in every 80s action TV show, and I know he's in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and then he's a few other movies I've seen, and he's
He's
just,
in Lethal
you know,
Weapon.
yes, he's in Lethal Weapon, the guy that tortures Riggs, that's right.
That's right.
So I just wanted to, you know, call out, big fan of Al Leong, and when I was looking at his Wikipedia page, my favorite credit for him is in an episode of The A-Team, he was Asian-looking thug. And I
Oh,
found
wow.
that humorous because he actually is Asian. So it's not that he's Asian looking. He should have just been Asian thug, you know? So I found that to be a very, very humorous credit.
So you should have tried to track down on that copy of that episode to see if he looks Asian there or not. Maybe he was standing next to somebody who looks more Asian. I don't know. But no, for me, I've first of all, I've always loved him in this movie. But I remember when 24 came out, and he was in that first season. And 24 came out in, I think, 2001, if I remember correctly. So we're talking 13 years later, and you can see he really aged. Like you could see that he put on weight and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, come on, this is Al Leong. How could that be? But he was still playing the same type of
Well, good for him. Got a
guy. That's
career.
right. I was like, okay, he must have survived Nakatomi, and is still in LA 13 years later, trying to find a way to assassinate the president. Who knows? And so he's eating this candy bar, and then we see in the next shot he doesn't have a candy bar in his hand. Okay, they show the SWAT guys for a few seconds, and they come back to him, and he doesn't have a candy bar in his hand. But what he does have, he makes a fist. He's signaling to Eddie with a fist. I have no idea what a fist means. It doesn't make any sense because the next thing that happens makes absolutely no sense. Okay, someone starts shooting from above. So how did Uli signal someone upstairs to start shooting?
Maybe I'm going to try to come up with an answer here. Maybe his fist to Eddie was to give Eddie the signal for Eddie then to say something into the mic to Theo. All right, you know, tell them to start and relayed it up to them. And then they started shooting like that. That's all I can think of.
But again, it's within fractions of a second. This is how quickly it is. And the shooting is the same place where the shooting came from. When someone shot up Powell's car. Now, it wasn't McClane who shot up Powell's car. I always thought it was McClane who shot up Powell's car. One of the terrorists on the third floor, okay, which we later find out he's been identified as Alexander from the script. He's the one who starts opening fire.
Got it.
He's got an itchy trigger finger all the time, and he wants to shoot. And he shot up Al's car. And he shot out all the glass there, but now he's in the same place and he shoots again and again shoots out all the glass. So they were able to quickly rebuild that glass. It's pretty good. Yeah. And then we get a shout from one of the SWAT guys saying, "Take cover." And then we get our good friend Robinson saying, "They're shooting at him." Like he's really showing his intellect here by telling everyone that someone's shooting. They're shooting at him.
The Rick Olier of Die Hard.
Definitely. And then the response from the SWAT guys is panic fire. They can't see anything. And then I love how
More
we then get a shot.
nonchalance, by the way. I mean, again,
Yeah,
is you know, again,
completely.
everyone in this movie is so unconcerned and untense. Panic fire, whatever.
Well, we've had that the entire time. I mean, come on. If nowadays someone were to call up 911 and say there's a terrorist attack in a certain place, the response from the 911 operator is not going to be, well, if this is a real emergency, call from your phone. You know,
Yes, yes.
Channel 9 is reserved for emergency use only. Hello, that's what this is. You know, there's the and again the whole thing with the. With the news people, you know, if you hear on a scanner that there's a terrorist attack somewhere, you're going to want to send someone right away. You're not going to wait around. You know,
Right.
2 weeks ago we talked about the fact of how long it took for Thornburg to convince you know, his boss to send him out. It just doesn't make any sense. Nobody's taking this seriously. So apparently, even the cops that are sitting here in Nakatomi are not taking this as seriously as they should be. You know, except for our good friend Al,
Right. They're
who's
shooting
sitting
at
there
the
and goes,
lights.
they're shooting at the
I
lights.
mean, it's said in such a tone of like, you doofuses, how am I the only one that realizes this?
That's right. And as he says that, one of the lights is shot out.
Right.
And then a few seconds later, a second one gets shot out. And then Robinson goes, they're going after the lights. So the question is he saying that in response to Al, or is he now the coin has dropped? He's now notices that that's what they're doing here,
I
that they're
don't
shooting at the
think,
lights.
yeah, I honestly don't think he heard Al say it because I think he's already like in his mind, like I'm not dealing with Al Powell, you know, he shouldn't even be here, whatever. I've taken over. This guy's just in my way. I don't even think he heard him say it because I think he's just ignoring him at this point.
Right. Okay. That's very fair. I think it's he's just mentioning it, you know, matter-of-factly.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. You know, he, and like the way he looks around, also he looks around like shocked that they shot out the light. He like jumps back. What is it? Hey, they're shooting at the lights. And I love the eye roll from Al.
Oh, so good.
You know, and then we're back to the front door. We see one of the guys, the guy trying to like lock pick goes, it's not happening. So then the commander goes, Mike, burn it. So then another one of the SWAT guys comes over and he pulls out this blowtorch and tries to open the lock. So what do you know about blowtorches?
I know they're used a lot in movies, and I wonder how much they're really used in real life.
Okay. That's actually very interesting. It's also known as a blow lamp. Okay. It's actually of ancient origin, and it was a used as a tool by goldsmiths and silversmiths. Okay, they actually used what they had a wick oil lamp with a mouth blown tube alongside the flame, and this allowed them to have the flame, you know, come out of the side in order to try and heat things up. So in 1797, a German inventor named August von Marquand, he actually invented a blowtorch, a what you can call a modern blowtorch, I guess. And basically, over the years, there were numerous different types of blowtorches that were created both in Europe and in the Americas. And the difference being in the US, they had them fueled by gas, by gasoline, and the European versions all use kerosene because kerosene apparently is much safer and it also costs less. And after the Korean War in the 1950s, everyone started using propane as the as their fuel of choice for using it. For using a blowtorch. So, I mean, the idea of a blowtorch is to be able to focus a certain amount of fire on a particular area, you know, an extreme pressure in a thing. So, I mean, the term blowtorch is commonly misused, and people use it for metal, a metalworking torch. But what it actually is a pressurized liquid fuel that is the way that they use things there. right? You can get them in different sizes or different amounts of power and stuff like that. And usually nowadays they're single handheld units with the draught being supplied by a natural draught of air and liquid fuel pressurized initially by hand plunger pump by a hand plunger pump. And nowadays it's being used by a it's regenerative heating. Sorry, it started by using a hand plunger pump. And then it is re the because of the because once the torch is lit, then it constantly stays lit because it's regenerating the heat that is being used there. So yeah, that's what they use it for. I agree with what you said. They overuse it in movies. I don't know if this is really a smart thing for what they're trying to do here by trying to open the lock by using a blowtorch.
Yeah, I
I
don't
don't know.
understand the
I
physics
don't
of
know.
that at all.
Yeah, I don't know if that's supposed to be effective or not, but
Yeah.
that's the way it is. That's what they're trying to do. And at this point, Hans, we get a shot of Hans, and he goes, "Don't be impatient, just wound them." And then we get another shot of our good friend Uli. What's he doing?
He's eating the Mars bar again.
He's eating the Mars bar again. He's eating the Mars bar again. These are pretty. I guess we're dealing with magic candy here.
Yeah, this is definitely a little bit of some editing problems going on. I think that Hans, it's very smart of him to tell them to just wound them because it's almost like he knows if we kill the cops now, it's going to bring hell down, and it's too soon in his plan for that. He doesn't. He needs to not have them bring up their level of need for ramp the level up yet because he's still got a lot to do for his plan to come into fruition. So it's like, let's wound them, not kill them, because obviously it'll still bring things to a heightened level, but he has no choice. They can't just let the cops come in. But if he knows if he kills them, that's going to be a whole other level.
Okay, but I agree with you on that. But later in the week, we'll see that that completely changes, and there's no
Yeah.
real reason for that to change.
I
But
did
whatever,
have a
we'll
note
get
later
there.
on that, yeah, it looks like I it's not the
Yeah,
case, yes.
he quickly changes his mind when, And at this point, Uli then throws the wrapper down. Finally, he's getting rid of it, and we get an internal shot of the blowtorch. On the outside, trying to get in. Now the sparks and everything, it looks like he's not doing it at the same. He's doing it at the level of, I guess it is the right level. It's not the level of the key card. The key card is higher up, but
Right.
it's the level of where you have the push bars to open the door. So I guess the lock is at that point. That actually does make sense. And what's great is we get to see the two cops on the side, sort of covering. I mean, they're not doing a very good job, but they're just standing there. They're bait. They're replacement bait, I guess you can say. And at this point, Uli continues with his decision to shoot, and we first get a shot of Robinson finally coming to his senses, and he goes, "Get him back! They're sitting ducks up there without the lights." And then the SWAT commander goes, "No, they're almost in." And then Robinson goes, "Get him back." He goes, "They're almost in. They're almost in." And at this point, we see that we get a shot of Al looking on again. Doesn't say anything. He's just looking back. And then the response is, "Send in the car. Send in the car," which reminds me always of the phrase, "Send in the clowns." It's not it's not sending the car, sending the car.
The chain of command in this scene is interesting because Robinson's in charge of the operation and he wants to pull them out. But the SWAT commander says they're almost in, tells him to stay. And so I'm wondering, even though Robinson has overall authority right now of the situation, because Johnson and Johnson aren't here yet, maybe the SWAT commander, though, has the authority to call the shots with his own team once an action is underway, so he doesn't have to do what Robinson says because they're in an active engagement.
Right. I think you're right about that.
Okay.
Because he basically he's basically challenging Robinson slightly by
Right.
saying, okay, you want to pull him out, but I don't. No, they're almost there. They're almost there. You know, but it's not as if he's disregarding the order. He's trying to convince him otherwise.
Yeah.
I think that's more or less what it is. And Robinson just shuts up at this point and doesn't do anything. And then they give us a shot in the distance of some lights coming towards police cars. And that's how this minute ends. Is there anything else you want to say before we get into the script?
No, not this minute.
Okay, so the script has a few minor discrepancies here, like always. First of all, no mention of candy bars, no shots of candy bars or anything like that. It says that Eddie and Uli take up prone firing positions using the gaps in the steel partition like gun points, which again is not what they're doing here. You know, you have one on one side and the other near the candy bar trying to, you know, shoot out. They also mentioned that both Robinson and the SWAT commander named Mitchell are behind the police car. As the SWAT officers that are close by, they remove a portable welding torch and begin cutting their way through the locks. You know, they didn't even mention the fact that they were trying to pick the locks. The first thing they're trying to do is use the blowtorch to get in. And those are the only differences in this minute in the script. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Alan Rickman performances. So why don't you start with number five and work your way up to number one?
All right. Number five, I'll go with the first Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, since that's the introduction to his character in that series. You don't know what to expect from him. He's got great Alan Rickman voice in that movie. So I'll go with that for number five. Number four, although I think this is an absolutely horrendous movie, he is the one good thing about it. Sheriff of Nottingham and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, just solidifying his status as someone who can play a great movie villain. Number three, Galaxy Quest. He didn't usually do humor, Alan Rickman, too much, but he really nails that role. I know I did Shakespeare. Excellent stuff. Number two, the final Harry Potter movie, Deathly Hallows Part Two. I think that's one of the best twists in movie history. Having not read the books, I never saw it coming. And he really, really, it's kind of almost like a compilation of just the entire role that he played in the eight movies coming to a head there with how well he played it, leading into the twist of his character. And I hope that this is allowed, but number one is this movie. I mean,
Of course.
this, you
What do you
know,
mean is
okay,
allowed?
good. Yeah,
That's the point here.
good. Yeah. I
I
mean,
didn't
it's
say
just,
these
it's a no-brainer.
diehard
Yeah.
movies. Yeah.
It is a no-brainer. This is absolutely his best. This is one of the top five, six movie villains in history, as far as I'm concerned.
I definitely would agree with you on that one. Excellent. All right. So why don't you once again tell people how they can get in touch with you, Eric?
Sure. So I was the co-host of Escape from New York Minute and Flash Gordon Minute, and they are both available on any podcatcher out there. And you can contact us through our listener groups web Facebook pages, and we both also have Twitter feeds as well.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay!